how our society treats Sunday has been changing rapidly and radically in the last couple of decades. Huge social change is upon us. Perhaps we don't easily see it as we live in it from day to day, but change is happening. Pubs, which used to close on Sundays between lunchtime and tea time, are now open all day. Most shops, including DIY shops, were shut 20 years ago. Now, within just 40 minutes drive of my house in those last 20 years, three different shopping centres have opened. These huge glass and steel cathedrals to consumerism are full of shops and food courts dedicated to supplying the things that have come to symbolise wealth and status in our modern society. And if you think these places are busy on Saturdays, boy, you should see them on a Sunday afternoon. Our society is increasingly shedding its historical position on Sunday as a day of rest. And as it does so, more and more, it will challenge us and present issues for those of us who are Christians trying to use the day in a way that honours God. These issues are coming up because the society around us is becoming less Christian and more pagan, more heathen. And we need to understand this change, and as Christians we need to react to it accordingly. You can't avoid reacting to it. To do nothing is still a reaction, but it's not necessarily the right one. Increasingly, you will find that the norms and practices of the society that you and I live in will challenge us how we use Sundays. Shopping on Sunday is considered not just possible now, but preferable for many people. Extended family social events, children's birthday parties, football matches, yes, even weddings are now routinely scheduled for Sundays. Modern work contracts, especially the ones in the burgeoning retail and services sector, increasingly require people to work on Sundays, or at the very least, they treat Sunday as a non-special day in contractual terms. How are we going to react to these changes? Have you thought about any of them? When you start to think about the issues and how society is changing, the problems seem to loom thick and fast. And it's easy when faced with really challenging issues like that, that really conflict and disagree with our practice and our behaviour. It's easy when faced with issues like that to just bunker down, to withdraw to our safe Christian experience, and just refuse to think about the issues. But cutting ourselves off from those issues and the modern world that's bringing those issues to us is not the right answer. Do you want to become increasingly irrelevant to the modern world as a church? Do you want to be culturally and influentially isolated? Do you want your version of how Christianity is practiced to become an anachronism in a modern society, in much the same way that, say, the Amish people are in the USA? I hope the answer to all those questions is no, you don't want those things to happen. It should be no, because Jesus wants his followers to be salt and light in society, enlightening it and preserving it, being distinctive and yet functional. Jesus hasn't called you to be so holy and separate that you have no influence or effect on the world at all. So navigating the tricky business of using our weekly rest day isn't a new issue. It's almost as old as the hills. 2,000 years ago, Jesus himself battled this very same issue. So let's have a look at this passage that I read to you in Mark chapter 2. And let's see if there's some 2,000-year-old wisdom that can help us in the 21st century. But just before I do so, let me just say what I'm not going to say tonight. I'm not going to deal tonight with the issue of whether the Christian Sunday is the equivalent of the Old Testament Sabbath. It's true that Jesus spoke in an historical and a cultural setting, but I believe his words are not just exclusively appropriate to his time, as they are recorded for us in the Holy Scriptures, and therefore I believe there is value here for us to understand Jesus' comments in light of the creation ordinance of one day in seven, a rest day, one day in seven. Now, I'm sorry if you disagree with that position. Please still listen to me if you do. Maybe there will still be some profit for you here. So, tonight, 3 points, made it even easier. 4 this morning, 3 tonight, because it's hot, and concentration's difficult when it's hot. So there are 3 points tonight, and they're very straightforward. The first one is this: the Sabbath rules. The Sabbath rules. So let's remind ourselves of what the Sabbath is. What's the definition of the word Sabbath? Well, it was a very significant day for the Jewish people. It was the day commanded by God from the very foundation of their nation to be a rest day. It was memorably given to them as the 4th of the 10 commandments. And it's recorded for us in Exodus 20, verses 8 to 11. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the 7th day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work, you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your cattle, nor your stranger who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested the 7th day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. So that's the history. That's the background. That's where we're coming from. And here in Mark chapter 2, we have a scene from Jesus' life. In his ministry period, him and his disciples are walking on this particular Sabbath day. And they're passing a field of grain. And the disciples are hungry. So they pick the odd handful of grain, and they rub the ear of grain in their hands to thresh it, and they blow on it to winnow it, to remove the chaff from the grain kernels. And then you're left with the raw grain, and you can eat it, just in that state. When we were kids, we visited a family friend sometimes who had a farm, and I remember doing exactly the same thing. It's a great little ready snack when you're out in the fields at harvest time. So that's what happened. The Pharisees had a problem with it. What's the problem with doing that? Isn't having something to eat when you're hungry allowed, even on the Sabbath? Eating's not forbidden on the Sabbath. But the Pharisees did have a problem with it, and they challenged Jesus, and they challenged him publicly in front of all the people. Because Jesus was a so-called religious teacher. He was spouting on about religious things. And so if he's a religious guy, shouldn't he keep the religious rules? Breaking the Sabbath law was a serious matter. It was a great social stigma in the eyes of the Pharisees. So why are they so uptight about breaking the Sabbath law? Well, the Pharisees, as I'm sure you're aware, have become famous, infamous, for their fastidious law-keeping. I think at the beginning they were in the right place. They had a desire to keep God's law. That's a pretty good desire, isn't it? If God set some laws down, what's bad about wanting to keep God's law? That's a great thing to do. The law mattered to them, and it was important enough to the Pharisees for them to do something about it. Those are great beginnings. Ah, But all people are sinners. And with our position of theological hindsight, we know that ultimately we can't keep God's law, can we? Who of us this day has managed to keep God's law? We can't. In fact, it's never, ever been possible for us to keep God's law. We can't become righteous by keeping the law. Its function is not to cleanse us and to declare us righteous. That's not what the law was given for. The law exists to expose our failings to us, to demonstrate to all concerned the hopelessness of our own abilities to be right with God by our own efforts. You cannot be good enough for God. The law is like a litmus test. Do you remember doing that in science? And it's a litmus test that we all fail. Our true colours are shown when we measure our lives against God's law. So if you take nothing at all away from my sermon tonight, I want you to remember this. You can never be right with God just by trying your best. You can't be good enough. Sadly, the Pharisees were too early or too blind to see that fact. Law keeping became their gateway to heaven. But they knew that we are fallible humans. And they were just as aware as you and I are that we make mistakes. So what was their answer to this? How do we stop fallible humans who are prone to making mistakes from breaking God's law? Well, this is what they did. They designed a new set of laws. Here are God's laws. Let's have a new set of laws. And what we'll do is we'll take God's law and we'll hedge God's law around with some other laws that are less strict, more strict even. These new laws are even stricter than God's law. And the reasoning was this. If you can keep all these other laws that are more strict than God's law, by definition, you've kept God's law. So be even more rigorous and more strict. And then if you manage that, you'll keep God's law. But the odd little break still doesn't get you to break God's law. It protected and insured against breaking God's law. So far, so good? Well, I think we need to be on our guard for this kind of thinking. And the problem with that kind of thinking is it puts more constraints on people than is honouring to God. It's an easy trap to fall into. Because unfortunately, doing this had the effect of making the Pharisees very rule conscious. And over time, it escalated their religion into a rules-based, actions-based legalism. One that was very far removed from the original intention of God. After a while, their laws, the ones they'd added, became as important as, perhaps even more important than God's original law. Their laws became an insidious yoke, a burden of heavy requirement, not just for the Pharisees themselves, but also for the society they sought to be the religious leaders of. And it weighed people down, and it burdened them. Hence why Jesus is so critical of the Pharisees, and especially of their condemnation of others when they broke the Pharisees' laws. The Pharisees had 39 laws about what you could and couldn't do on the Sabbath day. And no reaping of corn was right up there as number 3. So, here are Jesus and his disciples walking through the cornfield, plucking the heads of grain and blowing on them and winnowing them and eating them. And they're reaping corn. Rule number 3, Sabbath law breakers. And here's the great problem with rules-based religion. It doesn't differentiate between interpretation and intention. So, doesn't logic say that there's a world of difference between On the one hand, intentionally setting out with your combine harvesters and your tractors and your 50 labourers to go off to your field to harvest the corn on a Sabbath. There's a world of difference between, on the one hand, doing that, and on the other hand, being on a Sabbath afternoon walk and happening to be finding yourself next to a field and happening to be a little bit hungry and picking the odd ear of corn and eating it for yourself to satisfy your hunger. There's a world of difference. The first is intentional, planned, and utterly dismissive of the law. The second is slight, opportunistic, and needs-led. So let me ask you a question tonight. Do you have your version of Sabbath laws? Have you, out of an intention to spend one day in seven in the right way, sought to lay down behaviour codes to protect the day? Surely trying to keep the Sabbath principle in our lives is a good thing. But here's the $6 million question. Have the rules, the laws that you've created become more important and more significant than the original intention to honour the Sabbath? Have you become so passionate about the externals that you've neglected the inner heart attitude that God desires from us? Taken to its logical conclusion, our ability to keep the self-created Sabbath day laws might well cause us to be a little bit self-righteous, because we have Sundays and we do the right things on Sundays. And especially when we compare ourselves to our neighbours, those pagan heathens who treat their days off with no thought of God whatsoever. So while they clean their cars and visit the shopping centres and buy ice creams and, yes, have barbecues and arrange kids' parties, do we sit in relative tranquility in our Sunday best and look down our noses at them? If we do, we need to repent of such behaviour, and we need to learn again to have the mind of Christ, and we need to be open to new ways of viewing and behaving on our version of the Sabbath. So there's the Sabbath rules, point number one. Point number two is the Sabbath principle. The Sabbath principle. How did Jesus answer the accusation of the Pharisees? Look, there are your disciples breaking rule number three of the Sabbath day laws. You shall not reap corn. How did Jesus respond? Well, it's an amazing response. Because he turns them first to Scripture, to the Old Testament passage that I read to you. Jesus draws a parallel with what happened with his disciples and what happened with David all those hundreds of years back. And then he expands that specific example into a general principle. And in doing so, helps us tremendously. So, let's look at the incident with David. He's been anointed as future king, but he's on the run for his life. Saul's out to kill him. Now, even though he's appointed by God as the future king, he's still a feeble, fallible human being, just like you and me. And so, on the run, with no time to prepare, hungry and tired and a little bit exhausted, he goes into the priest. And he tells this made-up story to try and convince the priest to give him some bread. I'm not excusing him. I'm not recommending you do the same. Isn't it interesting that Scripture is very honest about us feeble, fallible human beings? So here is David trying to extricate some bread from the priest. And the bread that David's after, because he knows the temple has bread, every single week they baked loaves of bread and they put it out on a special table. And it was designed and ordinated by God as a symbol of God's blessing and goodness to the people. And then it was reserved for the priests to eat after 7 days. And so it was holy showbread. And yet David claimed it in his hour of need. I'll have some of the showbread, please, Mr. Priest. Technically speaking, he did the wrong thing. because only the priest could eat that bread. So isn't it weird that Jesus uses that very example of David breaking the rules, the religious rules of the Old Testament, to justify the disciples' behaviour? What Jesus is saying is that God's commandments regarding religion and expected practices can sometimes be suspended when there is a higher need. That need was hunger for the desperate fleeing men. And Jesus, in doing so, confirms for us that acts of mercy, that meeting human needs, even simple physical needs, can sometimes trump God's commands. Is that a bit of a shock to you? The point that Jesus is making here is that the religious rules are designed for human benefit. But when enforcing the rules brings no benefit to humans, and indeed if it further increases their discomfort, then the rule can be temporarily suspended on that occasion. Not dissolved, not ignored in the future, but temporarily suspended. It's like God is the ultimate pragmatist, even when it comes to his own law. In his mercy, he remembers that we are human and that we have needs. Jesus, in doing so, reinforces to us the fact that the Sabbath is given as a privilege and a gift. It's not a yoke. It's designed for our good, not to enslave us. It's not about what we can't do on that day. That's not what the Sabbath's about at all. Rather, it's about making it easier to do what we should do on that day. So we have to have practical pragmatism as we interpret the rules, not blind legalism. So just exactly how do we implement this practical pragmatism when deciding on how to use our Christian Sundays? Well, I think the answer comes in two parts. The first of which is this: always, always, always keep the principles in mind. Even when you can agree on the rules, and you won't always, but even when you can agree the rules, you still need to walk the fine line between two extremes. On the one side, there's the ditch of self-righteous Pharisaical behaviour. Look how good I am because I keep the rules on a Sunday. That's the ditch on one side. On the other side of the path are the crags of slippery standards. They end in a blurry self-gratification and physical enjoyment. Carnal use of our time that does your soul no good at all. So we've got to be on our guard and walk between these two extremes. And letting your standards slip time and time and time and time moves on. Letting your standards slip gradually happens over time. All humans like to blur the boundaries. Occasional compromises, well, they become regular compromises. And then they become regular established patterns of behaviour. And then they become very difficult to break. And before you know it, we're using the day just like all the pagans are. So we need to be careful. Always keep the principles in mind. Remember, having rules that we boast about, keeping rules legalistically, is not the goal. That's not what Jesus wants us to do. Man was not made for the Sabbath. It's not the ultimate goal. The Sabbath was made for man. For our edification, for our benefit, for our mental, physical, emotional, and spiritual renewal. In fact, that gives us a neat little summary of the Sabbath principle: renewal, not rules. Renewal, not rules. Remember that. Keep that in mind. Regularly review the way that you use the day and how you use it according to that principle, and you won't go far wrong. Maybe you don't see the issue at all, though. Perhaps you'd rather be using all your days off just as you see fit. And you think Christian Sundays, well, they're a bit of a drag, aren't they? Especially having to sit in these church services when it's dead hot. Wow. If that's how you think, well, perhaps it's because you've not yet realised just how precious your eternal soul is. One day in seven was given to us as a regular reminder that we have a soul that needs renewal, that ultimately needs salvation. You wouldn't go all week without feeding your body, would you? You probably wouldn't go all day without feeding your body. So, don't go all week without feeding your eternal soul, which is much more precious to you than your own body. In giving you a principle for the Sabbath, renewal, not rules, I'm not saying that rules are necessarily wrong, just so long as they don't become yokes or more important than the day itself. But when they're just rules, maybe they're good. So, there might well be certain things that you choose not to do on a Sunday. Not because they're forbidden. Not because you don't like doing them. But because you choose not to engage in them to help treat one day in seven as different. And those choices may be different for each of us according to our consciences. And you've got to respect the conscience of your brothers and sisters. Some of us may choose not to watch TV on that day. Some of us will. Perhaps if you listen to a lot of pop or rock music all week, maybe it helps you to listen to classical music on a Sunday as a way of differentiating the day. But these choices are never going to be easy for us. We have all sorts of different ideas, don't we, about what's helpful and unhelpful. And those choices that you make are going to be especially difficult if you live in families. What if the rest of the family don't like the classical music that you want to play on a Sunday afternoon? And even if you can agree together about what you won't do as a family, what do you do when some relatives come to visit? Or when you're staying away at somebody else's house on a Sunday? Do you keep your separateness? Do you maintain your holiness? Would you do it even at the risk of offending your non-Christian hosts? Would you do it at the risk of offending your Christian hosts? I think in circumstances like that, we are going to have to make some compromises. But just how much can you compromise before it becomes an issue? Parents, how do you set and enforce the rules for Sunday in such a way that you don't exasperate your children and in a way that teaches the principle behind the behaviour? Don't have answers for those last two questions. You need to go away and think about them and pray about them. The Sabbath rules, the Sabbath rules, the Sabbath principle. The third point for tonight is the Sabbath ruler. The Sabbath ruler. And this is the second way of keeping the Sabbath. The second helpful answer to how to keep the Sabbath. The Sabbath ruler. What does Jesus say? The Son of Man, verse 28, is also Lord of the Sabbath. Focus on him. After all, the whole reason the day exists is to remind us of our necessary relationship with God himself. In the Old Testament, there were many Sabbaths. God gave not just one day in seven to his people, but he said 1 year in seven. Don't plant any crops. Don't harvest. Don't plan for what you're going to eat that year. Don't plant crops 1 year in seven. What on earth are we going to eat? Ah, says God, I'll give you a bountiful harvest in year six, so that you've got enough to last you through. Why did God say that? As a physical demonstration of the people's faith in God, in God's loving provision for their physical needs. And so the Sabbath is all about our relationship with God, about our faith and dependence upon him, and his loving care for us. And Jesus is the Lord of the Sabbath. He is the very reason why we can have a relationship with God. He is the one who brings together God and his fallen creatures. The Sabbath. It's all about Jesus. So when you need help understanding how to use the day, what boundaries to set and when and how much to flex them by, think about Jesus. Think about your relationship with him. Understand that the day is designed to help you know him better. Flex when you need to, after covering it with prayer, and seek Jesus. And practice his principles of sacrifice and love and self-denial. Give to others on a Sunday instead of pandering to yourself. Do acts of human kindness. Put others first. Demonstrate Christian grace and Christ-likeness in your community. And then your Sundays will do you spiritual good. As a handy summary, perhaps you could think Christ, not coldness. Christ, not coldness. I was talking to a lady the other week, and she said her non-Christian family wanted to take her shopping on a Sunday, and she said no. And then later on that afternoon, she found out that her neighbour needed some essentials, so she went to the shop for her. And her family said, "You're a hypocrite." And she said, "I'm not. Helping my neighbour who needs some essentials." She wouldn't go shopping for herself, but she did it for her neighbour. It's a great example of what I'm talking about. Think Christ, not coldness. Don't be known for your religious legalism. Be known for your Christ-likeness. So there we have it. Don't be a Pharisee. Don't make the rules so important that you obscure the reason for the day. Remember the Sabbath principle. It's about renewal, not rules. And remember the Sabbath ruler. Christ, not coldness. Thus equipped, you will stand a better chance of navigating the rocky waters ahead as our society increasingly presses in on us with its version of Sunday. And you will be better equipped at using and appreciating God's original intention and purpose for a weekly rest day. Amen.